This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Breaking news during the break there.
Ezzy's going to do CrossFit?
Ezzy's going to do CrossFit. Something's going to be breaking, too, if Ezzy's doing CrossFit.
Hey, Sabrina Carnevale just came by, and we were talking about working out, and I said maybe I'd like to try CrossFit.
I think that might be the end of the CrossFit fad, let me tell you. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Vancouver Sun, Ian McIntyre. Ian, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, it's nice to be on with you guys. Nice to have a matinee game, something we don't have in Vancouver very often.
Yeah, that's true, I guess, with the Pacific time zone doesn't lead itself to matinees very often, but it'll be a 2 o'clock start between the Jets and the Canucks at MTS Center this afternoon. Obviously a key game for the Winnipeg Jets, given that they've fallen out of a playoff position. But the Vancouver Canucks have had a successful road trip, going 2-1 so far, and have really sort of affirmed themselves into the Western Conference playoffs, second in the Pacific Division. Is there a sense in the Canucks dressing room that, you know, they've done sort of the heavy lifting that they really needed to do, and they're a little more comfortable now as they enter the last four games of the regular season?
I think there is that sense, or at least there was Thursday when the team went to Chicago, having swept the St. Louis Blues and Nashville Predators on back-to-back nights on the road, which was a very good 27 hours for Vancouver. And I don't think their intensity was quite as high against Chicago, because they're, after that sweep to start this difficult road trip, their playoff cushion, if we can call it that, was 7 points, which is the highest it's been all season. And even though the players were saying, no, we got to focus on the next game, we haven't clinched anything, which is true. You know, they haven't clinched anything yet. I think human nature, they still felt like they'd finally put some space on Calgary and LA. But this team is not home and clear yet, and they have LA for a home game on Monday. And so between the Jets game today and LA on Monday, not only really big games, obviously, for the Jets and LA for the wild card battle, but a big game for the Canucks as well to try to get over the hump here and clinch a playoff spot.
Ian, Canucks goaltender Ryan Miller was back on the ice practicing on Friday for the first time in almost 6 weeks. Obviously, he's out with that groin injury. What's the timetable? Has the timetable gone up? Is it possible that we're going to see him before the playoffs?
It's a knee injury. He had an MCL sprain. And it's a good question. Ordinarily, a player coming back from injury, if this were February, if this were November, I'd say absolutely we'd see him before the playoffs, because that, you know, the playoffs, the regular season has a week to go. And generally, if you're well enough to practice, you're going to get a game sometime towards the end of that 1 week period. The problem for Vancouver, of course, being in the playoff race, is they can't afford to experiment or to give anybody, whether it's Ryan Miller or anybody else, a test run just to see how he does. So I think a lot of that is going to depend on how the Canucks do these next two games. Certainly it's Eddie Lack today and almost for sure on Monday, because, as you say, it was Ryan Miller's first practice on Friday. He was one of two guys down at the rink this morning at 8 o'clock to get some work in. He'll get a little more work in tomorrow, but that's not enough to prepare him for a team like the LA Kings, who are big and brawny and have a net front presence, much like the Jets do. So earliest would be next Thursday or Saturday. And again, we don't know that the Canucks are going to be in a position to give him a game. I think they will. I think they'll find a start for him. But then that leads to the next question. Well, if is one start enough of a sample to change your starting goalie for the playoffs?
You know, around these... Oh, go ahead, Ian.
Well, I was just going to say, right now, to me, reading the tea leaves, it looks like Eddie Lack is still going to be their guy, as long as Lack keeps playing the way he has been.
How does it play into, in terms of Willie Desjardins kind of being loyal? You know, he plays his forwards together for a long time, struggles or not. How does that play into the goaltending decision?
Well, he's handled Lack the way that he handled Miller when Miller was a starter. In fact, Lack has played more because, you know, the alternative, Jacob Markstrom, isn't quite as appealing, although Markstrom obviously is still considered a good prospect in this league after several years in the league, but he hasn't elevated beyond that prospect status. So Desjardins said all along that he believed in Lack and that he had a ton of confidence in him. But he also said yesterday he feels even better about him now than he did when Miller went out. He said he knew that Lack could play and that if he had to play, the Canucks were in good shape. But until you actually go out and show it, then there's maybe a little grain of doubt. Well, there's no grain of doubt now with Eddie Lack. He's been terrific. He's been 2.5 goals against and a .920 save rate, which is good. It's not spectacular by NHL standards, but it's good considering he hasn't been a starter. And the Canucks, 10-5-2 in the 17 games that he started since Miller went out. That today will be number 18 out of 20.
You think of Desjardins, and around these parts, Ian, you look at the Jets and the Flames, really, and people are focusing on that last game of the season and talking about Coach of the Year candidates, and Bob Hartley and Paul Maurice's names are spoken about quite often. What about Willie Desjardins for that? If you look at the Canucks roster, it's not... and certainly not the most impressive roster, especially up front, that you're going to see. There were defensive injuries and, of course, the goaltending issues that he's had to face. Where would you say, you know, he is in that race, and is he maybe being overlooked east of Vancouver?
Yeah, well, I think he will get some consideration, but it's hard in my mind to eclipse the guys you mentioned, especially Bob Hartley in Calgary, because it's easy to forget because Calgary basically has been good from about the second week of the season, mm-hmm. that they were supposed to be in the McDavid sweepstakes, you know, along with Edmonton. That's where Calgary's neighborhood was supposed to be. But Willie Desjardins has done a terrific job, especially, I think, during the injury crisis the Canucks had in February. I mean, Ryan Miller, when he went out on February 22nd, he was the eighth guy out of the lineup, the eighth regular out of the Canucks lineup. I know the Jets also had terrible, mm-hmm. have had terrible injuries on defense. So you know what kind of crisis that can cause. And Vancouver, that coincided with their toughest stretch on the schedule all season. You know, they were on the road for five games and then back for two and then away for three more. And they beat a lot of very good teams, Vancouver did, on the road with makeshift lineups. And I think in a case like that, you do have to give the coach a lot of credit. But in my mind, the Canucks were always going to be right on the cusp as a playoff team. You know, whether they were going to be a 94-point team or a 98-point team, I thought there was enough left over from the John Tortorella disaster year. There was enough left over on the roster, mm-hmm. that the right coach and the right manager would be able to generate a pretty good rebound. The rebound has been even, especially under those circumstances like the injuries, the rebound has been better than what I thought it would be.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Ian McIntyre of the Vancouver Sun, discussing the Canucks ahead of their visit to MTS Center this afternoon, 2 p.m. puck drop against the Winnipeg Jets. Now, Ian, in writing your game story after the loss to the Chicago Blackhawks, you mentioned that the Canucks were blown out in the faceoff circle again, losing the faceoffs by a margin of 41-22 against the Blackhawks. It's been a season-long struggle for the Canucks. They're 28th in the league in faceoff percentage at 47%. How much of a concern is there about their the lack of success in the face-off circle for the Vancouver Canucks this year?
Well, it's a significant concern, and it's been that way since the season started because that was an area they knew they were going to be weak, and it's turned out to be. The problem with being a weak face-off team, I mean, other than the obvious that you're chasing the puck, it hurts your special teams, all that. You know, if you think of the percentage, 47%, well, it's not horrendous. You know, if you're starting with 9 out of 20 faceoffs, that's not that bad, is it? But you have games like the Chicago game where when you're against a good faceoff team, you hardly win any. If you could be 47 every game, it's not so bad. But the Canucks have had a whole pile of games this year where they're, you know, in the 30s or low 40s. And against good teams, it is a concern. It's a concern as well that that Brad Richardson, who's not a great face-off guy either, but it is a center who plays with grit and, mm-hmm. you know, typically doesn't lose draws cleanly, at least can muck it up a bit. He has basically been out for 2.5 months now with an injury that was supposed to be maybe 2 games. And there's some real concern about whether he's going to come back if the team makes the playoffs. So, yeah, face-offs are an ongoing concern with this club, and I don't think that concern is going to abate at all if they get into the playoffs where every draw seems so much more important.
Ian, Canucks center Nick Bonino's been pretty hot as of late, 5 points in his last 4 games. How would you assess his season so far as the replacement, essentially, for Ryan Kesler?
I would say it has been average. He's had spells where he's been very good. He had a long drought in the middle of the season where he got almost nothing done offensively. The surprising thing about Nick Bonino, and I suppose it's a good thing for the Canucks, is that when the trade was made, he came from the fourth line of a very good team. He had been on the first unit power play in Anaheim and had done terrifically on that unit. So when the trade was made, he was regarded as kind of maybe a one-dimensional player, would be great on the power play for Vancouver, but what else could he do? The surprising thing is the second unit power play in which Bonino plays has been awful. There's no other way to put it. Mm-hmm. They've got 2 goals in the last 3 games. Those 2 goals are only one fewer than they had in the first 74 games this season. So on the power play, he has been completely ineffective statistically, but he's been a terrific penalty killer. He has had very strong games 5-on-5. Right now, that's probably their best line, the Bonino, Higgins, Radim, Verbata line, which I guess technically would be the second line, has been the Canucks' best. So he's a more rounded player than what we thought, but it was a surprise that he hasn't made any impact whatsoever on the power play.
Ian, final question for you. Chris Tanev just recently signed a 5-year deal, $4.45 million cap. We spoke about it on our show about a week and a half ago and thought that the value was certainly there for the Canucks. What was your perspective on that contract?
I thought it was a very good signing because Chris Tanev is one of those guys, if you're not watching him, and I suppose every team has a player or two like this, if all you see of Chris Tanev is on television a couple of times a year or 6 times, whatever, and you look at the NHL stats each day and see how he's doing, you have no appreciation for how good the guy is. I mean, the Canucks, they have an extensive analytics department. They don't talk about it. It's like their Area 51. You never hear anybody talk about what the Canucks are doing analytics-wise. But this is an initiative that's been ongoing for years. It was Mike Gillis who started it, and Trevor Linden elevated it when he took over a year ago. Their analytics department doesn't do things like Corsi and Fenwick. They do a lot more advanced stuff than that. And one of the things that they track is zone exits and zone denials. And essentially, per player, how often when he has the puck does the team get out of its own end and with possession of the puck? And Chris Tanev is not only the best guy on the Canucks, he's one of the top 5 in the NHL because the Canucks track every player in the NHL. That's the kind of value that I think is reflected in that contract. And he's a young guy who kind of came out of nowhere, arrived in professional hockey in a hurry, you know, at 18, 19, mm-hmm. even 20. It didn't look like he was going to have any career. And by 22, it looked like, wow, this guy might be a kind of player you want on your defense for 20 minutes a night for the next 10 years. And at his age, he's probably still just going to get better. And the Canucks do have some older defensemen as well, guys in the early 30s. So it was a very important re-signing. And I think in a couple of years, regardless of what kind of points Chris Tanev puts up, his salary is going to be considered a bargain.
Ian McIntyre covers the Vancouver Canucks for the Vancouver Sun. Ian, appreciate your time this morning and enjoy the game this afternoon.
I sure will. I'm looking forward to it. My first game in Winnipeg since the old Winnipeg Jets.
Looking
forward to experiencing the atmosphere. It'll be terrific.
It should be a wild atmosphere given the stakes of today's game. Ian, appreciate the time. Thanks very much.
See you guys.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. Big thanks to Ian McIntyre of the Vancouver Sun for joining us to talk about the Canucks ahead of the Jets-Canucks game coming up in a little more than 4 hours' time until puck drop at MTS Center for the latest, biggest game of the year that the Winnipeg Jets have faced.
Still awake, Drew?
Am I still awake? Of course I'm awake.
No, I've got a little bit of a beef with Richie here. You know, during the break, Rich, as he always does, asked if anybody has any change to go get a drink. Richie's drink of choice is usually Diet Pepsi.
Isn't it a little early for a Diet Pepsi?
I mean, Drew, I've been up for a while here. It's not a regular Saturday.
Soft drinks this early in the morning. Your dentist with the Linden Market Dental Center. Les Rikus is shaking his finger at you and saying no.
The other thing is, the guy between Ezzy and I at the coffee shop this morning ordered a bottle of Pepsi at like 7:45. So I feel like it's full fair game here.
Yeah, that was inappropriate. But anyways, Richie asked me for some change. So I
was inappropriate was when you came up to the drive-thru and were talking to me on the phone.
Yeah, that was a little inappropriate. Nonetheless, I give Richie a dollar. Drinks are 50 cents here at the studio and at the station. And Richie comes back with a drink for himself and gives me 50 cents back and doesn't bring me a drink. What is that?
Well, I would think that, Ezzy, you should actually be thankful that Richie didn't just take your 50 cents change as well. So really, you're coming out 50 cents ahead of the game here when you really think about it in that sense.
How am I ahead? I have no drink.
Yeah, but Richie could have just taken the dollar and kept the dollar for himself.
I guess so, but I want a drink.
You want a drink. That's what it boils down to, is you want a drink.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. I can accept that. Let's look at the Eastern Conference playoff race as we enter the stretch drive over there as well. And more so than, obviously Boston and Ottawa are still battling out. Ottawa with a game in hand on Boston, but 3 points behind. What jumps out to me is the team that is occupying the first place in the wild card position in the Eastern Conference. Normally, it had been the Washington Capitals for the majority of the season. Lo and behold,
Washington's better than Pittsburgh.
It's the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Washington's better than Pittsburgh.
Please go on.
I don't think Pittsburgh's that good. Again, it's hard for me to make predictions, and we don't know who the matchups are going to be, and we'll wait until next. I guess the season actually ends on Saturday, not on Sunday this year. It'd be interesting to see who they play against, and it's always difficult to pick against a Malkin Crosby team just because either of those players are able to put the game on their back and win it. But overall, we talked about the defensive injuries they have. Even if they didn't have the injuries, I'm not so sure I'd be sold on the squad. Obviously, there's the questions that in place with Marc-Andre Fleury, which will remain unanswered until such time as the playoffs begin.
But the guys won a cup. Those questions still exist forever, but he's won a cup.
Yeah, so they still exist.
I know.
The big thing is Mike Johnson.
Penguins head coach.
How does the team react to him in the playoffs? The Dan Bylsma teams seem to kind of be playing almost too methodically at times. And I think they became a little bit predictable in the strategic element of the game. And Mike Johnson, I know, wants to push the pace and wants to do different things. And I think he has a roster to, at least he did have a roster when healthy, to be able to push the pace and play a fast-paced offensive game. Can the defensemen on the team now get the puck up to the forwards to play the style of play that they want? And are they going to be able to play against a team that they can, employ that style in the playoffs? So there's a lot of questions there. And, you always hear rumblings. You don't know. Does Mike Johnson, does he need playoff success immediately to entrench himself there as a coach? I don't want star rumors. You never know. So I think it's an important year for a lot of these guys is to, they won the cup in 2009, guys. And Sidney Crosby's, Evgeny Malkin, and they're near the end of that prime period.
Yeah, they're not getting any younger.
Yeah, and the desperation in their games, I think that's why I'm so interested to see how they play in the playoffs because one cup and it's so hard to win the cup. Sure, but it takes a roster of 18, 23 guys here. But Taves has his cup, and obviously LA has two cups, and Crosby doesn't want to go through his career as being a one cup guy because that affects his reputation and his legacy in the game, as far as I'm concerned.
I think the Crosby stuff is over-exaggerated a little bit. I mean, he's second in the entire NHL in scoring. Maybe he's not at that 110-point level, Richie. To me, the whole issue here...
playoffs, though. That's all I care about.
The whole issue here with the Penguins is the injuries. Malkin is injured. Yeah. Letang is injured. Erhoff is injured. Olli Maatta is injured. I mean, this team has had a terrible year with the injuries, and that's not an excuse. But, I mean, at this time of year, you start to worry. But to me, I mean, the Eastern Conference playoff race is a really fascinating. And, you know, you mentioned that Pittsburgh right now is in that wild card spot, and Washington, surprisingly, was before that. But if you're Pittsburgh, that would mean right now you'd match up against Montreal. And Washington, okay, great, you're not in a wild card spot. Now you match up against the Islanders. To me, if you're Washington, you don't like that matchup. And I think that...
You don't like that matchup against the Islanders?
I don't think so. I like the Islanders a lot this year, and they're a team...
2-6-2 in their last 10.
Yeah, but I mean, they're still at the top of the Eastern Conference. So, I mean,
To me, Washington is certainly the, you know, if there's a dark horse in the Eastern Conference, not saying that there necessarily is, because I think any team can come out of the East. The way Washington's going, the way they have, you know, Braden Holtby's playing, the way that team's bought into Barry Trotz, I don't want to touch Washington in the first round of the playoffs.
The 2-6-2, first off, means nothing going into the playoffs. I mean, when the playoffs start, it's its own animal. So, I mean, to me, you look at the New York Islanders, we saw them here on New Year's Eve. The Jets do well against the Islanders when they were here? No, they got smoked. So, I mean, the
Islander- other element to that is, and which would throw me off if I'm in opposition, is that last playoff run on Long Island. Like that kind of element. I don't want.
You think that
I see your point there, Drew, for sure. And you guys know I picked Washington to win the division. I've always been on board with the squad, and I've only liked them more since the season began. But do you want to go into Long Island when it's the last run for them before they move to Brooklyn? There's a that place will be insane.
The other reason, and not to say that Montreal isn't a dangerous team, but Pittsburgh, as we saw 2 years ago, had trouble with the Islanders. Now the Islanders are much better than they were a couple years ago. So I'm just saying there are no easy playoff matchups anymore. And in the Eastern Conference, I think we thought it was going to be a little bit more top heavy, but really it's not. And I agree with you, Drew. You don't want to play Washington necessarily in the first round if you're the New York Islanders, but I just think that it's not necessarily a bad thing to be where the Pittsburgh Penguins are. I agree with Richie. Look, if we were here 2 years ago talking about how Alexander Ovechkin has fallen off, I think Alexander Ovechkin right now is playing better than Crosby, and I think you could argue the Washington Capitals now have reversed positions with the Pittsburgh Penguins, and now they're probably playing at the top of the game. I realize that they're only 1 point apart here, but you're talking about a Washington Capitals team that brought in a new GM, they brought in a new coach, not any different than Pittsburgh, but I think for them, the way they've responded to that, and you know, bringing in Brooks Orpik and bringing in Matt Niskanen in the offseason from Pittsburgh, I think you've kind of seen the balance of power has shifted a little bit, and you could probably say that the Washington Capitals are looking a little bit better, healthier going into the postseason.
I would certainly like Washington, the way their defenses match up. I mean, Braden Holtby is I like Marc-Andre Fleury as a goalie, but Braden Holtby has been dynamite this year. I like Washington's chances more than I like Pittsburgh's, to what Richie started, the point that Richie started the segment with.
They got to get out of the first round. You get out of the first round, that's the hardest round. And it's not a guarantee you're going to get by the Islanders in the first round.
No, for sure not. What I'd love to see, though, is the Islanders drop, the Habs pass over the Rangers, and have the Habs play the Bruins in the first round, the Rangers play the Islanders. That's what the hockey really needs.
Well, then it would be, I mean, especially in the New York area, where every other sports team that they have is pretty much god-awful, and the New York Knicks are an abomination. Mm-hmm. You would absolutely own everything to do with the New York sports scene. You know, baseball will have just been starting up, so nobody cares that much.
And if that were to happen, Pittsburgh would play Washington.
Yeah,
so Crosby, it's possible. I mean, Rangers and Habs would have to flip, and the Rangers have two games in hand, so likely not going to happen. Although the Bruins could conceivably pass the Pens here, although again that looks unlikely because of the tiebreakers and the games in hand. But it is conceivable, and we've talked about it on the show before.
The Bruins can leapfrog the Red Wings.
That your first four matchups are Habs, Bruins.
Yeah.
Rangers, Islanders, Pens, Capitals, and Detroit, Tampa, and the whole Yzerman element there. You have four incredible storylines. Hockey could only hope for that.
Yeah, you look at the Bruins with a pretty, I guess Bruins and Detroit's schedule are fairly similar. The Bruins could pass Detroit. They're tied with Detroit at 93 points. So it's not like Detroit is home and clear in the Atlantic Division. They could certainly end up in a wild card spot as well.
If you guys saw that game on Thursday, sorry to interrupt, Desi. Wings up 2-0 on the Bruins in the third period at home and allow three goals. The last goal allowed
by was Peter Mrazek was awful.
Oh, they have goaltending problems. Yeah. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to discuss ways that we can increase scoring and excitement in the NHL. It's been an ongoing concern. We'll bring our own suggestions to the table. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
2 hours down into the final hour we go on today's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Dave Manouk doing yeoman's work as he always does on the website. It's now up to date with all of your Winnipeg Jets morning papers, so get caught up on everything you need to know about your Winnipeg Jets ahead of this afternoon's Jets-Canucks game, 2 p.m. at MTS Center, a game you can hear live on this station, also available on your television on TSN3. Want to make mention, normally we've been on at noon, you know, for the entirety of the season. This week and next week, the 8 a.m. starts. How nice it is to have producer Timmy back in studio with us. You know, we've been sort of, you know, slumming it with Remus for the majority of the year.
Is Remus coming today?
Not sure. But we've been slumming it with him for the majority of the year, so it's much nicer to have producer Timmy in studio doing the fabulous job that he always does. Now, of course, the show does sound significantly better because there is no Remus behind the board.
Yeah, you're right. It is great to have Tim here, and it's really addition by subtraction, right? Without Remus here. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know. We get Timmy, and there's no Remus, so it's a win-win.
A win-win situation. Completely.
Just kidding, Reem, we love you.
A little kidding. Just a little.
Anyways, I want Remus to be able to get... Remus is supposed to come and pull up a clip. We have our...
I've messaged him.
Our boy Rowdy.
Did Rowdy take a shot at us?
No. You got to listen to the clip, but...
Did he take Remus, a shot at us?
I'm concerned.
If Remus doesn't come, we're not going to be able to hear it.
Drew, he won IC Dutch Fan of the Year at the Ezzy Awards.
It was a hard-fought category. We are huge in Netherlands, of course. So, yes, our boy Rowdy will... Yep. Hopefully, Remus makes it in the next hour, and he can pull up that clip for us. There's no way he's not going to be in his usual chipper self at 10 in the morning. Remus, that is, of course. Talk about scoring in the NHL. We've talked about it really throughout the course of the season. We're of the opinion it's sort of been a down year entertainment-wise and scoring-wise and skill-wise and... really, in terms of there aren't any great teams this year in the National Hockey League. You look at the scoring leaders, and Crosby leads with 80 points in 72 games, 1 point up on Tavares and Ovechkin. We started this conversation a couple weeks ago on NHL Midweek about ways in which we can increase scoring in the NHL.
Yep.
We'll throw it open. You guys, can debate that. Is the number one issue, in your opinion, the number one way to increase scoring is to shrink the size of the goaltender's equipment?
That's the easiest way to do it, Drew. And people are like, these guys are so well padded. I mean, the problem that I have is like the goalie pads that extend really high up, the goalie pads that when they flop down to the butterfly, their equipment pops up a little bit. That kind of stuff can be eliminated. I think you can take off a little bit on the shoulder pads. You make the goalies a little bit smaller. I prefer that than I would to making the nets bigger.
Yeah, I agree, Rich. I don't think we're ever going to see the nets get significantly bigger. If the NHL, or really, this is a something that goes beyond the NHL, it's all levels of hockey. I think it's going to be pretty insignificant in the grand scheme of things as far as increasing scoring. Like, they're not going to increase the net as 2 feet on each side or something like that. Goaltenders have been working with the standard size of the nets their entire careers. If you start changing that around, it affects angles and all that. So making the nets bigger, to me, is pretty ridiculous. I think that's totally out. Even if the average goalie now is 6'4", I still think you have to keep the nets the same, Richie. To me, the goaltending equipment, yes, I do think it should be significantly smaller. Kay Whitmore is in charge of that with the NHL. He's the senior manager of hockey operations. So each year they come out and they say, okay, we're going to decrease the padding around the legs, the shorter leg pads. They came out and did that a couple years ago. So that's something they tweak, but I think they should probably look at all elements, the gloves and all that. So I think that's something that they should look at. But I think, to me, we're going to get on here with some more points. I think this, to me, is not the number one issue. I think it's one of several issues.
The point is to protect the goaltenders, not to give them as much padding as possible to be able to make saves. That's the biggest thing. So if you're able to shrink the pads, by a couple inches and still protect them, then what's the downside?
There wouldn't be one. That would be my question that I was going to follow up with.
There's no downside.
If it's an injury concern or a protection issue, I mean, the pad really just needs to protect the width of a person's leg. It doesn't need to extend 3 inches on either side.
That's right.
So, you know, none of us are saying that there should be any exposed flesh area on the pad, but there's no reason why it needs to cover a person's leg and then, you know, a couple inches on either side. And that's where I think the size issues are. I don't have a problem with them being sort of long up top between, say, the pants and the top of the pad. Mm-hmm. Protect that area. I guess that'd be the thigh almost. But there's no reason. The width of the pad is where I would find there to be a problem.
And if you talk to, you know, just quickly, they have made strides and they have, you know, we talked about making the padding around the leg smaller. If you ask some of the goalies, they actually, as Richie mentioned, touched on a little bit, some of the goalies actually say they've been doing better with a little bit less padding. So,
yeah. Another issue, Ezzy, that you've brought up is the removal of the trapezoid or making the trapezoid bigger.
The reason, exactly, and we know that there's reasons for that. We've talked about it. That was really the Marty Brodeur rule, the reason why they put the trapezoid in there. I think at the very least, to increase scoring, you make the trapezoid bigger or eliminate it completely. And that's because I believe by having the goalie come out to play the puck, that not only helps defensemen with mm-hmm. with injuries and all that, when you have, I mean, I know we have the automatic icing now, but to me, there are goaltenders, I should say, in the NHL who can play the puck and they act as a third defenseman. So you're talking about a guy like Carey Price. You're talking about a guy like Ben Bishop, who had 2 assists the other night for the Tampa Bay Lightning. There are certain goalies that are really good. Mike Smith is another goalie that's very good, even though he struggled a little bit in the net for Arizona. He's a very good goalie at handling the puck. I think if you let the goalies come out, you create more of an open, free type of situation in the defensive zone, and the goalie can come out and play the puck. It just restricts the goalie's movement. And Marty Brodeur has said this time and time again when he was both playing and since he retired, that he thinks it's a ridiculous rule and goalies should be allowed to come out and play the puck. And the thing is, Richie, you have the goalie come out to play the puck, and then, you know, it gives the forechecker an opportunity to you know, you see that more of an element.
Right.
I think the goalie should be allowed to be more mobile, I should say.
I think you just get rid of the trapezoid entirely. You know, you have pass, tip in for the forecheck into the corner and get on. And you know what? Let's get rid of that. Let's let the goalies go out and play it, and maybe you'll see some more plays made.
It opens things up. It really does.
To me, that stretches even back to the neutral zone, in that you have to make more plays to get into the zone as opposed to firing into the corner where the goalie can't touch it. I think you let the goalies roam free. I think the trapezoid's stupid. I thought it was stupid when they instituted it. I think it's worse now than it was before. And why take away a skill from a player who's, you know, if Carey Price works at his game, Marty Brodeur works at his game when he played, and we're very good at playing the puck, why should he be penalized for that?
Well, to your point, you know, okay, you're playing against Carey Price, you're playing against Marty Brodeur when he was a goaltender, and, well, we can't dump it in because you'll just send it right back out so quickly, mm-hmm. so we have to carry it in. Well, look, mm-hmm. the defense has forced us into a turnover, and now there's an odd man going the other way.
Right.
It seems like the NHL is... Every time they come up with ideas, they seem always short-sighted with how they consider them.
In some senses, yes, Drew. I mean, in other senses, you know, for every strength of every rule change, there's going to be a weakness to it that's going to be exploited by the coaches.
Sure.
That's the other angle.
You know, as your third idea, and you'll have to explain this one to me, is, and I'm reading this verbatim, is no more icing during penalty kills.
Well, it's pretty self-explanatory, and it's not an idea that I came up with. You don't allow teams to ice it when they're shorthanded. And
be
to
called
me,
icing is what he's saying.
Oh, yeah. You're saying call it icing.
Yeah.
Oh, so that if you send it the length of the ice, there would be a whistle and there'd be a face-off in the defensive zone.
And that'll just increase power play goals. I mean, it will, because now teams can't just fire it down the ice. And to me, that's a rule that I think would be very difficult to institute. Because, I mean, you're not just talking about the NHL level. Again, you're talking about all levels of hockey have always allowed, well, for a long time, the modern game of hockey have always allowed that. But to me, that's another way to open it up. I mean, we've seen time and time again, whether it's with the Jets or teams facing the Jets, you have a dominant power play and teams can ice the puck.
Now, this is the problem with that is you might increase goals. You're probably gonna have an issue with the quality of play. So what we're trying to do is have the quality of play high, maintain the quality of player, increase the level of play,
and get some production, you know, get some goals. The problem there is if you have guys icing the puck, they can't change on an icing, and they're on the ice for 2 minutes, just going to see guys standing there dogging it, and you're going to see guys passing around them and scoring. I mean, maybe they increase his goals, but is the level and the pace of the game, you know, the other side of that coin, and that, to me, slows down the game and decreases the level of play.
I would suggest the problem, at least from my perspective, isn't so much on the special teams. It's more of a problem with five-on-five scoring opportunities.
Well, special teams percentages are pretty bad too, aren't they, Drew?
Well, I mean,
like what's the power play percentage leading this year? 20% or something?
The power play percentage leading the league is 25.3%. That's
Washington.
After
that,
then it's 23.9 in Detroit. Yeah. No, I get the power play percentages might be down as well. I mean, but if you score
less than 1 in 5 chances, you're in the top 10.
Sure. If I'm going to focus on an area or make changes that are going to improve scoring,
That's fair.
I'd look at 5-on-5 changes as opposed to shorthanded or power play discussions at that point. Another issue you've brought up, Ezzy, you know, and this has been talked about, it's not going to happen. It's changing the point system. Stop awarding teams a point for losing in overtime.
Yeah, because the arbitrary system that they use now that artificially allows all these average teams to stay in these races you're gonna lose the races, and it's gonna be a problem. So there's teams like Tampa, Detroit, Tampa, and they'll be in the playoffs in December. And if you're gonna give them only home ice and no other incentive, it's gonna be it's gonna prove which teams are better, but it's not gonna give you the artificial races that they've created with these 3-point games.
And that's why, I mean, they're not gonna get rid of those, because there's, you know, you look at the teams that are quote, you know, still theoretically in the playoffs, Chase. You know, like the Florida Panthers, 6 points behind Boston. They're in the playoff chase. Yeah. San Jose has made this big run. They're in the playoff chase. I mean, come on. Dallas is in the playoff. They're not. But if you take away the 3-point games, of course, then they're going to be out a lot sooner, and the fans won't buy tickets, and, you know, the media won't be able to, you know, say that they're, you know, they need to
that's
win
right.
X number of
that's
games.
Right.
So that's not going to happen, even though I think it's universal that everybody agrees it should be on the table, but that's never going to happen simply for the dollars and the cents factor of it. Ezzy, the last suggestion that you've jotted down here, this one's the most interesting. Banning the 1-3-1 defensive system.
Right, and what we see time and time again in NHL games, and Richie was just talking about it earlier, what we see is teams that basically they'll set up three guys at the blue line, and they make it very hard to enter the zone. So what you see is a dump in, and with the mobility of defensemen, oftentimes the defenseman will go back and they'll get the puck, and they'll break out the other way, and you kind of see this chess game of who's the first team to make a mistake. You see this time and time again. So it would be very difficult to ban this, because how do you do that? I mean, do you make it so that you have to have you can only have a certain amount of players in each zone? I mean, it's something that I think, though, is the real issue here. Why is it so low scoring in the NHL these days? Because of the emphasis on defense. That's why. And when you talk about the emphasis on defense, what is it? It's playing a structured game to disallow goals and, more importantly, zone entries. Right?
All you hear is coaches talking about how if ever there's goals in a game is how poorly they played defensively, never how good the offensive game was.
Right. So, you know, the 1-3-1 system, or the variation of the 1-3-1 system, is used by many NHL teams to prevent offense and to prevent zone entries. And, you know, again, you know, it would be tough to completely ban that, because I think, you know, you'd have teams that would really go nuts as far as how that would impact the type of style they play. But you have coaches that really, I think, de-emphasize offense at the expense of defense. And, you know, this is something to me that I don't think is going anywhere. I don't think this is going to happen, by the way. But I think that, you know, you have that type of emphasis on clogging it up in the neutral zone and all that. I think, you know, you really see a lack of offense in today's game because of it.
The problem with Jane, you know, and as he makes a lot of good points there. The problem is, you'll vary the forecheck to be or the neutral zone play to be whatever's allowed and just clog it. So you want to drop into 1-2-2, which a lot of teams do. As he talks about a 1-3-1, which is kind of a variation of the 1-2-2, depending on where the defenseman plays in the neutral zone and the on the weak side.
So
coaches will always create systems that'll try and neutralize the
coaching.
Offense.
You know, that's the thing. I mean, if you were to do something like that, and to Ezzy's point about, you know, possibly restricting players, and, you know, we talked about last time, and maybe around the net or in the neutral zone, you'd have to have a ref upstairs who'd have to buzz down, and there'd have to be an immediate call, which would be made by the guy upstairs, because the refs on the ice couldn't follow that and also officiate the game. These are things to talk about. I think everything needs to be explored to be able to make the games more interesting than they are, because 3-2 boring games that go to shootout, I mean, they need to go foul by the wayside, because the quality, and other thing is, you're going to put two more teams in this league that just get worse.
Well, that's all. The number one way to create offense, get rid of about six of the teams.
Yeah, but that's never going to happen, so just try not to put more teams in the league.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning and their ticket policy for their playoff games. You're
ridiculous.
Listening. Richie says ridiculous. He's fired up. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, 20 minutes past 10 o'clock here on TSN 1290, and this segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show brought to you by our friends at Not Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their beautiful new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. For more information about Not Auto Corp, check out their website, notautocorp.com. Richie, you're fired up about the Tampa Bay Lightning and their ticket policy for the upcoming playoffs, where they have restricted sales of playoff tickets to only residents of the state of Florida.
They'll be empty.
If you have a credit card and you try and purchase tickets to a Tampa Bay Lightning playoff game, and the address associated with that credit card is not in Florida, the ticket purchase will be canceled and you will be unable to attend that game. And you find this to be outrageous?
It's outrageous. Shouldn't anybody be allowed to go to a hockey game if they want to pay market price for the ticket?
Can't argue with you on principle there. Not the first time this has happened. The Seattle Seahawks did this as well before the 2014 NFC Championship.
That makes
game.
No sense, only because the Seahawks have enough fans. I mean, Tampa clearly is worried about the amount of fans that they have and the amount of Eastern snowbirds and people vacationing and going down on cheap flights. In any event, if you want to restricting the tickets, first of all, the atmosphere in the arena at MTS Center is always better when there's some fans of another team. Philadelphia, Boston, the Habs. It makes the game more fun. The Leafs, it makes the game more interesting.
Sure.
Always has. At the old arena, when the Jets played here the first time around.
Monday, you wait till Monday when the Jets are in Minnesota on a long weekend. You don't think there's going to be a ton of Jets fans at Xcel Energy Center
Absolutely.
On Monday?
You're going to restrict where I can buy a ticket? If I want to go to a game? If I'm a fan of the league, let me tell you, they could use any fans that this league could use any fans they can get. And Gary Bettman hasn't stepped in on this. Where's he been the past 2 months, by the way?
Yeah, he'll be in Winnipeg in May.
That's great. But where is he now? Telling them this is a policy that shouldn't be instituted and ought not be allowed.
And Richie, we should mention that, you know, it's still possible for someone to get a ticket if they're not a Florida resident, if they get it on the secondary trade market.
Well, so why should I, as a hockey fan, have to pay more on the secondary market?
I agree with you, Rich. I'm not disagreeing with you. I agree with you 100%. By the way, Canada's tied it up 5-5 with the U.S. This has been an incredible game at the Women's World Championships. You know, sorry, I got a little distracted there, Drew, cheering for Team Canada. But
games on TSN, you can turn it on right now while listening to us at the same time.
Let's look at this really from an objective point of view here. You know, Amalie Arena, Lightning have a great fan base, by the way. We should mention that. They've always had a great fan base, and they've suffered through some tough years, and now they're a dominant team in the Eastern Conference, or at least a top team.
Hang on, Ezzy. You say that they have a great fan base. If they have such a great fan base,
exactly,
they shouldn't have to even institute this. I mean, you're never going to see this instituted in Winnipeg because there's no chance those tickets would ever be made available to anybody from...
But it's not the fan base that made this rule. I mean, that has nothing to do with the fan base. It's team.
Because of the fan base
If the
rule.
Fan base was good enough that they didn't need to put in the rule.
What I'm saying is the fan base that pays to go see the team isn't the one that is instituting this rule. It's the team that is instituting the rule. So that doesn't necessarily mean that the fans aren't good. The fans in Tampa Bay support the team. They have a good fan base. They're educated. They've been there for a while. What I'm saying is this is a team decision, a team policy, and it's the wrong one. I think, you know, their reason for it is because they want to have a more pro-Tampa crowd and all of that, but the reality is, you know, there's nothing wrong with having visiting fans in your building. We've seen that with some of the original six teams like the Montreal Canadiens and the Boston Bruins at MTS Center going back to the days of the old Winnipeg Arena. So to me, just to, the fact that there might be, you know, a few thousand fans of the opposing team isn't a bad thing. You know, Richie's point is, you know, this is going back to, you know, a very restrictive time that really, you know, this is not what it's all about. I mean, you should be allowed to purchase a ticket for a game. If you're a fan of the Montreal Canadiens, you know, Montreal, you go down the east coast of Florida and you want to go see, you know, make a road trip out of it. Now you can't do that. I mean, it's a little ludicrous.
I'm a Detroit Red Wings fan. And I live, I don't know, in North Carolina. And I want to drive down to Florida for the game. And I'm not able to buy tickets.
Let me rephrase this, Richard. You're not even a Detroit Red Wings fan. You're a Tampa Bay Lightning fan who lives in North Carolina.
So true.
Or South Carolina.
True. Yeah, that's a good point.
Or lives anywhere within driving distance. And you love the Lightning, and you've been waiting to see them make a big, long playoff run. Well, you can't buy a ticket now.
It's idiotic. It's an idiotic policy.
How about this part that we haven't even mentioned yet? The team is also prohibiting non-Lightning team attire in the Chase Club, which is a premium seating area at Amalie Arena.
It's also ridiculous.
It's like, come on.
Wear whatever you want. What? If you're paying $200 for a ticket, you should be able to wear a clown costume if you want.
Exactly. I totally agree. If you're paying the exorbitant prices to watch these guys play, you should be able to wear whatever the heck you want.
This is a hockey game. This isn't the opera.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if I wear sweatpants...
This isn't the State of the Union here.
If I wear sweatpants to the opera, that's inappropriate.
They'll still let you in, though. They'll still let you buy your ticket.
By the way, I'll never go to the opera. But
you wear sweatpants.
I'll wear sweatpants, but the point being...
I think opera goers are probably happy that you wouldn't attend, I got to tell you.
The point being that, you know, Drew, this is the U.S., this is Canada. You know, you have the freedom to wear whatever you want. Obviously, maybe not in Tampa. But this is a little disappointing, and yeah, maybe the NHL should step in here. But you know, you make a good point that if you're a Lightning fan living close to Florida, you can't go if you're not a resident of Florida. So it's disappointing. I mean, but again, the Tampa Bay Lightning brought this on themselves because this wouldn't be a story. This would not have been in the Tampa Tribune if it wasn't a story, right? Like most times when playoff tickets go on sale, Richie, okay, the playoff tickets are going on sale to the public. Great. But now with this restrictive policy, we were trying to remember off air if any NHL team has ever done this before. We don't think they have. You mentioned the Seahawks did it. But you know, I don't think this is setting a good precedent.
Thinking about it for the Jets, but the Jets fans. But the Lightning is just taking himself so seriously right now. This is a game. Like, what?
Here's the quote before we go to break. This is from Lightning spokesperson Bill Wickett. He told this to the Tampa Tribune. Quote, "We don't feel the need to apologize for doing our best to create a home atmosphere for our season ticket members and our team."
Gary Bettman's the one who needs to step in and say, regardless of what you want to do with your policy, this is something that's not allowed.
But Bettman's never going to...
Because he governs the league.
Yeah, but...
And the league...
But he answers
to
the owners.
The fans.
So what's he going to do? Why is he going to go kick in the shins of the Lightning ownership group? Why would
the best would be if they didn't sell the games because of this. That would be the best.
Well, the thing I don't really fully understand is my understanding was that the Lightning, especially when they've been playing well over the last number of years, have had a pretty decent home atmosphere and a pretty decent home crowd.
Apparently,
I was mistaken in that. I was under the impression the Lightning were of the southern teams, where the Lightning were probably one of the most solid ones. Certainly a function of how well they've been playing
this
as of late.
This is ridiculous. When did Canada tie up this game here?
Just a minute
when
ago.
When I said it, about Richie 7 minutes ago.
As he mentioned it. I think it was about at the 8-minute mark they tied it up. It's 5-all in between Canada and the U.S.
Rich, you feeling okay?
You could turn on this game, and I was more ramped up about the Lightning thing, so I wasn't concentrating on that. I mean, you could turn on Rod Black and Cheryl Pounder here. You could turn on Drew Mandel and Quarter Pounder.
I like that one.
You're a jerk. Let's go to break.
Okay.
No, hang on. What were you going to say? Were you going to try and build on that?
Well, all I was going to say is the main reason why this policy isn't good is because it sets a precedent for other teams to do it. And I think it's ridiculous. Let fans from every state and province go to whatever playoff game they want.
Where's Gary Bettman? I haven't seen him in months.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. The Jets and the Canucks, 2 p.m. this afternoon at MTS Center. Following us, of course, H&L, and then Rick Ralph, and then Paul Edmonds and Shane Knighty with the call today here on TSN 1290, a key game, of course, between the Jets and the Canucks. Everybody's got their microphones and their headsets back working order now?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay, after Richie tripped and pretty much destroyed Ezzy's entire workstation there, that was well done.
It's all good. There's a lot of cords going on here, so we trip and spill, stuff goes on. I just wanted to say really quickly, Drew, you know, we're watching the Canada-US game, Women's World Championship, that's tied right now. Canada actually really needs this one because they've won only one of the last five, and there wasn't a world championship last year because of the Olympics.
Haven't they won all the Olympics, though?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, except 98. But the U.S. Right now is defending champion, and as I mentioned, they've won four of the last five. So, you know, Canada, turn this game on. We got it on in studio here, and it's been a really exciting game.
It is a great game. It's interesting that. And the Jets are playing here, and every game's the biggest game of the year. There's 10 games left. These teams play 10 important games in 10 years.
Yep.
That's true.
All that matters is this tournament and the Olympics.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say that. I mean, the women's hockey is great. You should watch it. You should support it. But we're talking internationally.
Yes, of course.
Well, these games are always fun.
Well, we spoke about it earlier. There's no love lost between Team Canada and Team U.S.
You should change the format, though, of the tournament.
Yeah, they certainly
some
have
some kind of best of seven because they know who's in the finals because they know who's going to be in the finals.
That speech by Hilly Wickenheiser in 2002 will still, to me, be one of the best hockey speeches ever. I mean, it's up there with Espo in the 72 Summit Series. It really is.
And Drew remembers that. He was 14.
Let's talk about the Los Angeles Kings. They've signed Tanner Pearson to a two-year contract extension. This happened earlier in the week. I believe it's a two-year extension, $1.4 million per year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So what are your thoughts on that deal for the Los Angeles Kings and Tanner Pearson?
He's injured right now, so he hasn't been playing for the Kings for the last couple months. Obviously part of that 70s line with Tyler Toffoli and Jeff Carter, but he's a really good player. He was the last pick of the first round and kind of surprised a lot of people, Richie, with the way he's played. And, you know, to me, that contract makes sense. It's a bridge contract, obviously, for Pearson. They could have signed him to a longer period of time. But the Kings have had cap issues, and that's one of the reasons why Mike Richards has been sent down. But the Kings also have to sign Tyler Toffoli coming up, who's going to be at the end of his entry-level deal. But I like that contract. I mean, if you're paying Tanner Pearson $1.4 million a year for the next couple of years, and he's a guy to me that's kind of in that 40 to 50-point range. He's not going to, I don't think, I mean, he might surprise us and get up to that upper echelon, you know, which is now, you know, 70, 80 points. But he's a good player. He's got good hands, and he really works well, as I said, with Jeff Carter and Toffoli there. Not to say that he wouldn't work well with other players, but to me, that was kind of a contract that made sense for both sides.
A favorable contract for the team, I think, is, you know, you got 3 years. This is what the Kings do, right? They do differently than other teams. They play kind of like Detroit. They work you into your first contract in such a way that you'd never hit high numbers, and then your second contract, the bridge contract, as he mentions, is going to be pretty cheap. So 1.4 a year for a guy who can pop in, you know, 20 goals, it's pretty good value. I realize he'll be in his 4 or 5 years and with no arbitration eligibility, but this is what the Kings do, right? They play their guys in the minors, they bring them up after they've, you know, they've used up their junior years or a couple of their college years, and you know, he played, what, 25 games last year, and 42 games this year he's got, and I know he hasn't torn it up this year. He started, obviously, hot. But you have a guy who was very effective last year in the playoffs, and one of the keys to the reason that they won, and you're going to be able to get him at 1.4 a year, no play in your top six. So to me, that's good player and asset management.
Interesting move in Calgary, where they've recalled Sam Bennett from the Kingston Frontenacs of the OHL. He was their first-round pick in 2014, taken fourth overall. You know, decision was an interesting one because if they had assigned him, the Frontenac season ended, And if they had assigned him to the AHL, he was going to be unable to play for the Flames the rest of the year because they've used up their maximum number of recalls from the AHL to the NHL after the trade deadline.
Which is four.
Yeah, after the trade deadline, you're only allowed to recall a player from the minors four times.
Yep.
Or you're only allowed to make four recalls from the AHL to the NHL after the trade deadline. Do you think that Sam Bennett is possible he could crack the lineup for the Calgary Flames this year?
Well, Richie, he's only played because Sam Bennett was injured for most of the year.
Yeah,
he's only played 11 games this year for the Kingston Frontenacs. He had 24 points in those 11 games. He's obviously a top prospect for the Calgary Flames, and there was a good chance that Sam Bennett was going to play for the Flames and join youngsters Sean Monahan, Johnny Gaudreau, Josh Juris, all these guys. It's an interesting situation for Bob Hartley and the coaching staff there. Do you bring him in when at a time when the team really needs the wins and, you know, he could really give you a boost, or do you just have him around and you kind of...
You have him around.
Yeah.
You can't thrust him in the situation with this much pressure right now.
Yeah, I think to me, you keep him around and do you play him in the playoffs? I mean...
Why can't you thrust him into that position? The Flames have been nothing but precocious all year with all their players who've been willing to step up to every challenge.
You also have a bunch of guys who've taken you to the spot and you're suddenly going to take one out of the lineup because you get there?
I wouldn't replace him, but if there's an injury...
That's fine. Injuries are different. If you get into injuries, you're different. But no, you don't just drop him into the lineup without injuries.
Anton Lander in Edmonton signs a two-year contract extension as well. I believe it's a little bit under $1 million per season. I believe $985,000 per year, which is exactly what it is. Your thoughts on Anton Lander? You know, he was put on waivers prior to the start of the regular season, and all of a sudden he gets a two-year deal with the Oilers.
Don't know enough about his game, Drew, to really comment on that. I mean, obviously he's had some offensive success here and certainly has succeeded in the AHL being basically a point-of-game player. But, I mean, another smaller-type guy. They need bigger players and they need defensemen there in Edmonton. So, yeah, I mean, certainly it doesn't seem like a bad contract. I can't really speak to his game, but, you know, I can speak to what they need on their roster, in my opinion. And it's not more Anton Lander's, which isn't a bad thing that they have him, but they need more to be bigger guys up front and they need defensemen.
Yeah, Anton Lander's a player that a few years ago was a top prospect in the Edmonton Oilers system, 2009 draft pick. And, you know, Richie mentioned he is smaller. I've been underwhelmed when I've watched Anton Lander play. He's not very physical, and his offensive totals really haven't followed him to the NHL game. And, you know, you talk about the Edmonton Oilers moving ahead, and I mean, they've traded player after player away here. And they need to sign players that are NHL ready. And Anton Lander at this point has played in 3 years in the NHL, but he just hasn't really shown that he can definitely play a top six role. But yeah, Lander's a guy that to me, you know, he's going to get a chance here, and if he isn't able to produce, you know, I'm not sure what the future holds for him. But to this point, he hasn't really impressed me that much when I've watched him play.
He's played for Todd Nelson in Oklahoma City, so clearly there's a comfort level there, and maybe that's played a factor as well.
Sure. The Blackhawks announced that defenseman Trevor Van Riemsdyk, is going to undergo a wrist surgery, thus ending his season. There's some hope that that he might come back for the Blackhawks in the playoffs, or as we enter into the playoffs.
Where is he playing?
Well, he would have on the back end there. You know, potentially. You know, they've been using. I see what your point is. I mean, they've been using David Rundblad a lot. They haven't been loving him.
Yeah, but you have Chalmerson, Oduya, Seabrook and Keith, and Roosevelt and Timonen. You're gonna play the vets in the playoffs. The reason you give up those picks for Timonen is because you're gonna play the vets.
He was probably going to be there. I think if he was back, he would have definitely been their seventh defenseman over Rundblad.
Yeah. Well, you know, good team problems to have. Right.
Yeah, the Blackhawks defense, Richie. You weren't at that game last Sunday. That Blackhawks defense, Ezzy, you can probably speak to this more. Wasn't anything to, you know, the Kimmo Timonen really did look more than a step slow, I thought, playing on the back end for the Blackhawks last week.
I still think it's a really good defense. Maybe it's not the best group of defensemen in the NHL, but it's still up there. I mean, when you still have Duncan Keith and Nicholas Jarmolson is still an excellent defenseman. And he could be a top pairing defenseman on most teams, and Seabrook is still good. I know what you're saying, Drew. I mean, but Chicago used to be the gold standard for defense. And now you lose a guy like Nick Leddy, and we've seems like we've been talking about that loss for 6 months now, probably because that's when the trade happened. But when you lose a guy like that, and all of a sudden, Trevor Van Riemsdyk played 18 games, and he's a good skater. He's got some size. But again, you know, he wasn't overwhelming, and he got injured, and he kind of fell out of favor. And that's why they went out and made the move to get Kimmo Tiimonen, in part because of that. So it's unfortunate that he's not going to get to play in the playoffs. But, you know, he's young and has that bright future ahead of him.
I haven't watched Tiimonen closely enough to say, but I think that you have to make sure he's ready to go in the playoffs. That's your prime concern. He didn't play all year. And, again, you're looking at him playing against a third line of either Nashville, likely, or it depends. They could even hop over both those teams and play Winnipeg even in the first round.
Yep.
But likely it would be Anaheim playing Winnipeg if the Jets make it in. But I wouldn't be overly concerned right now about that. And I know that defense has played a lot. Those guys are different players, different games when they turn it on.
Keith can still play half the game.
Yeah, and Chalmerson, to your point, as he is a great defenseman, and Seabrook will turn it on when he needs to. Not that he has, now that he's been awful. I haven't watched him a ton. I've watched him a bit. But Kane is possibly coming back earlier rather than later. Does anybody want to play the Blackhawks right now? I don't know.
Does anybody ever want to play the Blackhawks?
Yeah.
Certainly not. One final one before we head to break. Minnesota Wild, they're getting a little bit healthier. Jason Zucker, ahead of schedule, expected to be back next week. Matt Cook, also expected to be, at least he'd be eligible to return to the lineup next week as well, as he's been injured along with Zucker.
Good to bring that rat back around, but can't stand Matt Cook. But, you know, you look at their roster, I mean, it's a luxury right now. Look at their three lines that they have rolling out. Chris Stewart kind of replaced Jason Zucker, who adds speed and scoring ability there. But sure, you can add those guys in instead of, say, Jordan Schrader or Ryan Carter, depending on what you're looking for. And those four lines look dynamite. I mean, Minnesota, nobody wants to play Minnesota right now. They've been just so good. And those guys are both quality. I mean, I don't like Matt Cook at all. I think players like him, frankly, don't really have much of a place in the game. But he can kill penalties, and he is a veteran guy. And I think Jason Zucker is certainly an upgrade over a guy like Jordan Schrader. Zucker can skate. He's a good shooter. They're a good team. That'll only help.
Alrighty, let's head to break. When we come back, we'll do one final segment. We'll recap or review the Jets Canucks game as well. Talk about our matchup, key matchups there. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Reminder, next Saturday, also the early start time, 8 a.m. here on TSN 1290, as the Jets and the Flames will do battle for the final game of the regular season. Will it be a playoff game? Will it be a play-in game? We will find out as the week unfolds. Before we get to a rapid fire, I want to make mention of a comment Ezzy made earlier about his sleep patterns being all screwed up. Ezzy, it might have something to do with the fact that you slept till 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, but yesterday it was a day off. Everybody got a day off. I hadn't had an opportunity to sleep in, and my phone died, so I didn't set an alarm. I missed a baseball pool that was, I believe, a little earlier than that.
No, it started at 2.
Yeah. So I slept in. I mean, I don't get an opportunity to sleep in, so I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Richie, how do you feel about your team in the baseball pool?
I haven't seen the other team. I like my team, actually, this year, but we'll see.
You had the first overall pick. You took Mike Trout. It's a head-to-head league, not a rotisserie league.
You had the second pick, and you ate Trout.
That's true. I ate Trout. You took Mike Trout. I ate Trout. You know. Any opportunity, right? Any opportunity.
You set me up for that one.
Yeah, okay. I did set myself up for
Drew
that one.
Drew had like a trout just like sitting flapping, and like Drew's like filleting a trout. That's good.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire for this Saturday morning. Sort of under the radar, but the teams are now going to be compensated for executives that are under contract and move from one team to another. Sometimes it's going to be a third round pick, or it could be a second round pick, depending on when the hiring occurs. You okay with teams getting compensated for losing executives who are under contract?
No. I don't know why. That's. I thought the general rule is if the executive is able to move up the ranks, that you would let him go and there wouldn't be any compensation. if you're making a move, you know, from one GM spot to the other, kind of like Brian Burke did from Anaheim to Toronto,
yeah,
I can see that.
Like a lateral move.
Yeah, but if there is a ability to further your career and maybe you're not able to in the organization, like for example, like Jim Nill leaving Detroit, I don't know if he's under contract at the time, but Jim Nill leaving Detroit for Dallas, why should he, or why should the Red Wings be penalized because they have a, or Dallas, excuse me, be penalized for
hiring a guy and promoting him?
Hiring a qualified general manager. I don't understand that.
It's Detroit, of course, lost Steve Yzerman and Jim Nill when they were promoted to Tampa Bay and Dallas,
respectively. Well, that's only because they have such a qualified general manager in Ken Holland that there's no place to move upwards there.
Right.
And Peter Chiarelli with
a lot of the
Peter
Chiarelli in Ottawa. Right? Proprietary information that these teams all have now. But
I don't think you're going to see a lot of teams do it, Richie. If you could possibly lose a second or third rounder, which are all obviously valuable, you'll probably see
exactly.
less of it.
So then you're costing these managers, these guys who put time in, ability to make more money and an ability to further their career. I think that's stupid.
Here's the formal rule. There's only three positions that warrant compensation: president of hockey operations, general manager, and head coach.
How do you enforce that, by the way? What if he becomes the vice president of hockey operations? You know what I mean? Like, you create titles.
That's
how you get around it.
So if you hire any of those three from an opposing team while they're under contract, and if it occurs in the off season, the compensation is a third round pick.
Is under contract fired still mean under contract? Because technically you're still under contract if you're fired.
I don't know. That doesn't say it. My guess would be not, because right. you're fired. Yeah. I mean, you're getting paid, but you know, you're probably not under contract. And if it happens in season, so if you were to hire some team's assistant general manager to be your assistant general to be your general manager during the season, the compensation becomes a second round pick. For coaches, the off season begins when the current team's season ends. For a general manager or a president of hockey operations, the off season begins only after the NHL draft in June. Seems like a pretty steep price to pay for some of these.
Well, Gary Bettman's been letting Tampa Bay not let fans into the arena with other teams jerseying on, and then coming up with rules like this. Ooh.
Well, I think there's also the issue, Richie, of the teams that did this in the past. You mentioned Dallas with Jim Nill, and they're not going to have to give up a pick. So it's kind of one of those things where the next team that does it, I should say, they're going to have to give up a second or third rounder. But Dallas kind of got away with one there. But you don't see this, I don't think, enough that it's going to be a huge issue coming up. And obviously it only affects your given team. But I think if you're going to sign either a head coach, GM, president of hockey operations during the season or the off season, and you're going to have to give up that pick, you better make sure that you got your guy.
Second and third round pick. Who comes up with these ideas?
The general managers themselves in a lot of cases.
Because they don't like losing talented guys because they're talented? I mean, you can deal with it. Why
is this what they were focusing on? Why is this an issue? Why was this brought up in conversation? Why was this such a hot topic for them?
I don't understand.
Washington Capitals forward Alex Ovechkin recently told Pierre LeBrun on ESPN.com that if he could play for another team in the NHL, it would be the Montreal Canadiens. Said Ovechkin, quote, "The culture, the atmosphere, the city. If I wasn't in Washington, yes, here, Montreal is where I'd want to play." Do you think Ovechkin will ever play for another team that's not the Washington Capitals?
I think it's a good question, and I think
you wrote the question.
I think you seem to think that Ovechkin and Crosby and Malkin and players like Jonathan Taves and guys that are under long-term contract, the superstars of the NHL, are never going to leave their teams. And I think that you will see Ovechkin on another team. It's probably not going to happen in the next year or two. But
they're both signed for like 35 years.
Right, but I think circumstances change and you might have to go in a different direction. So, again, I think that it's not going to happen in the immediate future, but I do think that, you know, a player like him, there might be another team out there that's really going to give up a lot to get him.
Why is this a story? I mean, I don't mind as he's throwing it in here, but I mean, why is this, like, because he'd want to play, any other team he'd want to play for is the Habs, but he's not going to play for the Habs. He's signed a lifetime deal, essentially, in Washington, and so he likes playing in Montreal because the atmosphere is great. Well, everybody likes playing in Montreal because the atmosphere is great. He's on a 10-year deal. If he was on a 1-year deal, I'd be very interested in these comments.
Yeah, but he would never make these comments if he was on a 1-year deal.
Exactly.
With an assist on Thursday against St. Louis, Jiří Hudler now has 72 points on the season. Yeah, 29 goals, 43 assists, which ranks 7th overall in the NHL. Does Hudler deserve serious consideration to be a nominee for the Hart Trophy as the NHL's most valuable player?
not for the Hart Trophy, because you could argue that he's not the most important player in that line. I think the most important player in that line, as he would be a really interesting argument, is it Monahan, is it Goudreau, or is it Hudler? Line's been dynamic.
I think absolutely Hudler deserves credit for being a Hart Trophy candidate. Really? He probably won't be. Well, he's sixth in the NHL in scoring right now. I think he's had an underrated season, and I think without Yuri Hudler there, I'm not sure that success of Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau happens.
Yeah, that's
fair. He's been excellent, and he's had timely goals all year, and he's been doing this for Calgary for many years now. And I think that, you know, you're going to get a lot of votes for Carey Price, and you're going to get a lot of votes for John Tavares and other players. So I think it's going to be tough for him to get a final three. To be a finalist for the Hart Trophy, but he's done some amazing things there in Calgary. And yeah, you're right, Richie. Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan are excellent players, but I think, you know, Yuri Hudler many times is leading that line.
I just looked at the stat, the top scorers again.
Mm-hmm.
As you look at that, and Hudler at eight is really awesome. Like, it's great. It's good for him. That is like the most depressing points list you'll ever see. I know we've talked about it like five shows in a row. The leading scorer in the league, 80 points. Wow.
Quickly, before we get to cheers and jeers, your keys to the game between the Jets and the Canucks this afternoon.
Got to play hard. Got to play physical.
Good gap control.
Take away the gap.
Yeah.
Got to get start. You got to get a lead. Good goaltending. No, Drew, the key to playing against this Vancouver team is using size and speed. Is, as we said earlier in the show, making their forwards defend. You get all the right matchups and keeping this team off the power play. The Canucks' top players aren't the fastest and aren't the strongest. So you exploit that weakness, and you take advantage of that, and you engage them physically, at the outset. I feel like then the Jets sometimes stay away from that for a first period. They don't really engage in the second and third. So that is important to get that and get in on the forecheck on their defensemen and make their forwards defend. Those are the few of the keys for me.
Yeah, the Jets obviously play better with the lead, and they've only lost, I think, one or two games this year when leading after two periods. The last game was only one of those two games. So that's a given, Richie. You're right. And the physical component of the game is something that can wear down the Vancouver Canucks. The Vancouver Canucks, for the most part, are a two-line offensive team, not to say that they can't get offense from other lines. So you got to make sure that you keep those Sedins under control and don't give them any opportunities on the power play. And I think, you know, if you play like you've played the last couple of games, Montreal wasn't a very good game, but if you play with speed and physicality and pace, which is the same thing as speed in a way, but just a little bit different, you know, they'll be fine. And I think, you know, if you want a prediction, 4-1 Jets.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richie, I'll start with you.
Well, sad news today. Elmer Locke passed away from the Montreal Canadiens. Well-known line mate and center for Maurice Richard. So that the Habs always do an amazing job of honoring their former players. And you hear a lot about many other of the former Habs, but he's one that had a significant role in many of their championship teams. So it's a sad day in Montreal, and you'll see the team honor one of its legends. So they do it better than, as you've mentioned before, Drew, than anybody else. And sad news on that front. So he gets a cheer, obviously, but sad news nonetheless.
Oldest living NHL player, Elmer Locke, and our condolences to him and his family on his passing. 97 yeah. years old. Ezzy?
I'll cheer Jaromir Jagr. He's now fourth, tied for fourth with Ronnie Francis all-time. Ronnie Francis, of course.
Yes.
Tied fourth all-time, scoring with 1,798 points. He'll probably pass Ron Francis this season, but it's incredible. I mean, Jagr, fourth all-time in points. He's still getting it done in his early 40s, so he's going to get my cheer.
Yeah, he's been unbelievable since they acquired him.
Yeah.
I mean, still a stupid trade, but he's been great.
I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer Paul Dvorsky. He's refereeing his final game this coming Sunday between the Penguins and the Flyers. He's had a tremendous career, one of the last sort of referees you remember and can identify, as opposed to the anonymous group of officials that we see night in, night out nowadays. So Paul Dvorsky, kudos to him. A tremendous career in the NHL.
His brother, a linesman, Greg Dvorsky.
That's right. His brother's going to work the game with him between Pittsburgh and Philly. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Royal Sports, and Not Auto Corp. Big thank you to our guests, Brad Berry, the University of North Dakota assistant coach, and Ian McIntyre of the Vancouver Sun. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Tim, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hustler and Lawless are next.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.